For this Thursday, September the 3rd, this is Washington Today on C-SPAN Radio. I'm Steve Scully. Here are some of your headlines. The Dow plunging today. We'll have the numbers and explain what it means. Health and Human Services Secretary Alex Azar is rejecting concerns that the Trump administration is rushing the approval of a coronavirus vaccine in the run-up to the election. This comes after the CDC directed states to prepare to begin vaccine distribution as early as November the 1st. The president is being criticized for suggesting that Americans vote twice in this election, prompting Twitter today to add a warning label on a number of his postings. The move is at least the third time the president's preferred social media company has placed, quote, a public interest notice on his postings. Twitter writing the following, "Our goal is to prevent people from sharing advice about voting twice, which may be illegal." Rochester, New York, the latest flashpoint for perceived police brutality against an African-American suspect, a suspect who later died. And while Democratic nominee Joe Biden is in Kenosha, Wisconsin today, the Trump campaign hitting back hard on that visit. The story shaping Washington today. It's all ahead on C-SPAN Radio. We begin on Wall Street with today's closing bell. It was a huge sell-off as the Dow loses more than 900 points. The Nasdaq was off by nearly 600. The S&P dropped 125. With more on today's sell-off, we're joined on the phone from London with Caitlin Ostroff. She is a markets reporter for The Wall Street Journal. What happened?
Yeah, so that's kind of the thing that everyone's scratching their head at. I mean, you had stocks open a little bit down, but usually saw the height of the sell-off, as the day continued to progress. And markets have climbed so much over the last couple of weeks and months that people have been kind of wondering whether this recovery could last. But at the same point, I don't know that it was quite expected that it would start unwinding today. There's some expectations that maybe retail traders were doing specific trades in the last couple of weeks that, while pushing markets higher, once stocks started to come under a little bit of pressure, that maybe some of those had to start unwinding, and that kind of just brought everything down much more drastically than we would ordinarily seen if this was a different type of sell-off. And so there might be some technical factors at work here, but largely the move caught people by surprise because there was such a period of strong and then still consistent recovery in markets.
Is there a concern among investors that this could be the start of another period of some real volatility for the markets, for investors, and for those who have 401ks or other investments in stocks and bonds?
Yeah, I mean, it's different than the sell-off that we saw with the virus when people started to take that seriously and we started having economic lockdowns. There's no economic or health reason for the sell-off. And so the hope is that maybe some of the volatility and some of the damage won't be quite as bad. But at the same point, it is looking like we're going to enter another period of volatility, and what that means for markets is still largely unknown, given that this did catch so many people by surprise. And so the most that you can do is just kind of hope that you have some safe assets in your portfolio, and, you know, markets eventually come back up, even if they don't reach the levels that they were at before. So the most you can do is, if you're able to, just kind of focus on the long game.
You are in London. I'm curious, Caitlin Ostroff, what type of ripple effect we have or will see in Europe and in Great Britain?
Yeah, so the sell-off in the U.S. markets started right as the session in Europe was actually ending. And so when for most of the European trading day, you actually had its benchmark indexes going up. And what happened in the last hour and a half was as the U.S. opened and it started falling, it dragged Europe with it. And so you saw a pretty decent-sized moves in Europe indexes after that, and we're likely to see that continue tomorrow, and you're also likely to see that in Asian trading overnight.
This Wall Street Journal headline, U.S. stocks fall amid decline in tech shares. The reporting of Caitlin Ostroff. She is a markets reporter joining us tonight from London. Thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Meanwhile, here in Washington, Senate Democrats are making a last-ditch effort to try to undo the president's payroll tax deferral. In a letter from Senator Chuck Schumer, the Democratic leader of New York, and Ron Wyden of Oregon to the Government Accountability Office, the two lawmakers are requesting that the congressional watchdog determine whether guidance issued by the Treasury Department and the IRS on the payroll tax suspension is deemed, quote, a rule for the purposes of the Congressional Review Act. Now, that act is a law that Congress can use to overturn any rule handed down by a federal agency. The temporary suspension put in place by the president's executive order allows employees to delay the collection of the 6.2% tax workers pay to fund Social Security. Generally, Social Security taxes are capped for a salary above $137,000. The deferral applies to those employees whose wages paid in biweekly periods fall below $4,000. It would be in effect through the end of this year. And now to the White House, where Press Secretary Kayleigh McEnany insisting that the president was not suggesting that people do anything unlawful when he encouraged voters to test the system by voting both by mail and in person, doing so on Twitter and in remarks. It was, of course, the latest back and forth between the White House and the Biden campaign as the president accuses Democrats of setting up potential voter fraud through the mail-in ballot system. ABC's Jonathan Carl with this line of questioning.
Kelly, do you acknowledge that it is illegal in this country to vote twice in the same election?
Are you referring to the president's comments earlier today?
I'm just asking you a basic yes or no question. Do you believe it is illegal to vote twice in this country?
The president does not condone unlawful voting. The president's been very clear about this. I'm once again not surprised the media is taking the president out of context. Do you recall what the president said on this matter specifically?
I have it right here. Sure.
Okay, maybe you should read it out for me then.
Okay, so the president said that you should go to your poll, you should vote early by mail, and you should go either early voting or day of and try to vote again. So he is asking people to vote by mail and then to go down to the polling place on election day and to vote again if they can't confirm their vote has been counted.
You are missing a very crucial line from the president's remarks. If it is not tabulated, meaning your mail-in vote, then you will be able to vote in person if it is not tabulated.
There are at least five states in this country that do not count any mail-in votes until Election Day. So those votes won't be counted until afterwards. So there's no way to know whether or not their vote is
there's good. A very simple answer, and this is how it works. First, a lot of states have what are called electronic poll books. And what this means is that in real time, this is updated. So if your vote is counted, they check the electronic poll book, and you will not be able to vote in person because your vote has been counted. There's a secondary situation. So those who do not have electronic poll books, every single state in the country, you can cast a provisional ballot. And that is a ballot that is there. And if your vote that you have not mailed in is not counted, they will then count the provisional ballot. And that is exactly what the president's referring to. But what Democrats are doing is saying this: we want an entire new system for voting, one subject to fraud. Don't take it from me. Take it from Jimmy Carter, who said in 2005, as part of a bipartisan commission, absentee ballots remain the largest source of potential voter fraud. So what Democrats want you to do is say, trust us, but don't verify. Don't verify that your vote's been counted. This president's trying to enfranchise Americans, which is exactly what he's been saying. He wants every American to have a vote because he understands what Jimmy Carter understood and what so many of us understood until the president started putting the focus on mail-in voting, and that was this, that it is subject to fraud, every vote should count, and every American should verify that their vote is counted by going to their polling location.
Also, from today's briefing at the White House, the press secretary, Kayleigh McEnany, criticizing New York Governor Andrew Cuomo and New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio. The president, by the way, is threatening to defund what he calls lawless cities, including New York. More from today's briefing.
The president signed a memorandum last night directing federal agencies to look at funds that might be withheld to cities that do not do enough to restore law and order. By what authority does the president believe he can do that?
Yeah, the president believes that what we should do, that the purpose of government is to protect life, liberty, and property. That is the purpose of the federal government, and it's imperative that the federal government review the use of funds by jurisdiction. So what this does, this memo, it really does three things. One, it asks federal agencies to detail all federal funds that are being provided to Seattle, Portland, New York City, and Washington, D.C. Secondly, within 14 days, the Attorney General will develop a list of anarchist jurisdictions, of lawlessness zones that are permitting violence and destruction of property. And then within 30 days, the White House Budget Director will issue guidance to the heads of agencies on restricting eligibility of or otherwise disfavoring to the maximum extent possible by law anarchist jurisdictions in the receipt of federal grants. And South Carolina v. Dole did note that you can withhold funding so long as it pertains to the federal program pertains to what you're trying to incentivize. So we believe here, when you look at New York, a 177% increase in shootings, in Seattle, where there was a lawless chop zone where two died, in Portland, where you've seen 140 officers injured, this is a dereliction of duty. And if the states will not act in their police power and secure their streets, this president will use every lawful mechanism available to him to try to supplement their failures. And in some cases, that's meant federal officers. In Minneapolis and Kenosha, where we've been invited, this is yet another attempt to make sure no more children like Legend Taliaferro die on our streets.
These are congressionally appropriated funds. I expect that you would expect there to be immediate legal action taken. Letitia James, the Attorney General for the state of New York, warned a few minutes ago that if you try to withhold any funds, she will immediately slap you with a lawsuit.
Well, she's free to do that. We believe that what we will do will be lawful within the bounds of the law, and we encourage states to act and cities to act in the way that Kenosha and Minneapolis did, although be it delayed a little bit there, they finally stepped up and asked for federal support, and they got it, because too many Americans are dying on our streets, too many businesses being burned to the ground. That's not the American way by a long shot.
That with Kayleigh McEnany, the White House press secretary, and John Roberts of the Fox News Channel. This headline from the New York Post, Mayor Bill de Blasio blaming COVID-19, not defunding cops, for the crime wave in New York City. And following her remarks earlier today, this response from New York's Democratic governor, Andrew Cuomo.
The president has been tweeting up a storm, as is his way. I believe the president is fundamentally a bully, which I've said to you many times, and I know him very well for a very long period of time. It doesn't work in New York because you can't bully New Yorkers. We just don't get bullied. We don't respond well to it. And I want to talk about facts. You know, the president says a lot of things, but facts still matter, even in this political environment, right? When it comes to protests in New York City and public safety, and I'm concerned about public safety in New York City also, right? We are all, New Yorkers are all concerned about it. City residents are concerned about it. But public safety is not a federal responsibility, not constitutionally in New York City. It's a state and local issue. The federal responsibility for public safety is national security, and that has been a great failure by this president. He said that his protection of Americans against these protests is akin to World War II. No, World War II, I'll tell you what's akin to World War II. It was the COVID attack. This nation has not been attacked by an enemy who has killed more and ravaged more than COVID since World War II. And the president, as a commander in chief, has been an abysmal failure in the war against COVID.
Those comments from New York's Governor Andrew Cuomo. In a CNN interview, Dr. Anthony Fauci is casting doubt on whether an effective vaccine for COVID-19 will be ready by October or early November. This after the CDC telling states to prepare for a large-scale distribution by November 1st. But Dr. Fauci, who is the government's top infectious disease expert, said while it is unlikely, it is not impossible that the U.S. will have a vaccine ready later this year. Vanity Fair is reporting that actor Robert Pattinson, who tested positive has tested positive, forcing the production on the Batman film to halt just days after it resumed shooting. And college campuses continue to adjust to this COVID-19 era. Temple University suspending most of its in-person classes through the rest of the fall after the school reported 237 new cases. And at the University of Georgia, professors there are asking that the school go virtual after the number of cases quadrupled over the last week to more than 800. Democratic nominee Joe Biden meeting with the family of Jacob Blake. He, of course, the black man paralyzed after he was shot in the back seven times by a police officer in Kenosha, Wisconsin. The Democratic nominee, along with his wife, Dr. Jill Biden, speaking privately with Blake's father, brother, and two sisters, and also talking to Jacob Blake on the telephone. Members of the Blake family's legal team were also present. You might note that President Trump declined to meet with Blake's family when he was in Kenosha, Wisconsin on Tuesday because the family wanted their attorney present. And in public statements, the Democratic nominee had these remarks.
Right now in the United States of America, we don't have the kind of housing funding we had back in our administration earlier before that, even in Republican administrations. No one should have to pay more than 30% of their income to be able to live and have housing, including people on the street. That's why I proposed a $400 billion program to vastly increase available housing in America. And by the way, it's not a waste of money. Even the folks on Wall Street point out that will increase the GDP, make it grow. People will do better. People will do better. Hard as the devil for any of your clients who are black to get an entrepreneurial business loan. All the studies show they're just as qualified to be able to succeed as anyone else is. Barack and I put together a program that was $1.5 billion that brought $30 billion off the sidelines. And we provide that program for the local small business association so you can go and apply. Because guess what? If you get a loan, then the private sector says, hey, he's got government backing him. We're going to join him. We'll get in the deal with him or her. We're going to move that to $150 billion. It's fundamentally changing where we go. Okay, I'm giving you too much. I can see you're about to stand up. Mental health. Mental health is a badly needed commodity right now. That's why in the Affordable Care Act, we insisted it be treated equally. There's no difference between a mental health problem and a physical health problem. They're both related to your health. They should be both covered. You talked about the whole idea of federal support, you know, clinics, and you know, we need community clinics. You guys are expected to do everything right now. And Barb, you talked about, you know, rebuilding. Well, you know what? Let's get something straight here. Protesting is protesting, my buddy John Lewis used to say. But none of it justifies looting, burning, or anything else. So regardless how angry you are, if you loot or you burn, you should be held accountable as someone who does anything else. Period. It just cannot be tolerated across the board.
That from Kenosha, Wisconsin earlier today with Democratic nominee Joe Biden, and expect a response from the president tonight, who is traveling to Latrobe, Pennsylvania. Live coverage on the C-SPAN networks. You're listening to Washington Today. This is Washington Today on C-SPAN Radio, available as a podcast for Thursday, September 3rd. Here are some of your campaign 2020 headlines. Democratic nominee Joe Biden and President Trump running neck and neck in Florida, according to a new Quinnipiac University poll released earlier today. The survey showing that the former vice president with a narrow 3-point lead in the Sunshine State, with support from 48% of likely voters, and with the president at 45%, neither candidate enjoying overwhelming favorability in the state. In battleground Pennsylvania, Joe Biden holding on to an 8-point lead. That also according to a Quinnipiac University poll. The former vice president at 52%, the president at 44%. And a Monmouth University poll showing that Joe Biden has a 2-point lead over the president in another battleground state, North Carolina. That, of course, also is within the margin of error. Well, the Biden campaign is out with a new ad looking at racial disparities in our country. It comes as the former vice president did travel to Kenosha, Wisconsin, as we mentioned earlier in the program. Here is that campaign spot.
Why in this nation do black Americans wake up knowing that they can lose their life in the course of just living their life?
Part of the point of freedom is to be free from brutality, from injustice, from racism, and all of its manifestations.
We have to let people know that we not only understand their struggle, but they understand the fact they deserve to be treated with dignity. They gotta know we're listening.
Reforming policing in this country means creating a national standard on use of force and conditioning federal funds for police departments on adoption of that standard. It's about reining in qualified immunity. We hold police officers accountable.
We can't turn away. Now is the time for racial justice.
I believe with every fiber in my being, we have such an opportunity now to change people's lives for the better.
It's about who we are, what we believe, and maybe most importantly, who we want to be.
That from the Biden campaign. And in a statement today, the Trump campaign with this on Joe Biden back in Wisconsin, quote, Joe Biden made a political trip to Kenosha today, his first visit to Wisconsin after months of saying he would not travel because of the science of coronavirus. What changed was political science. As he knows, he is in serious decline in the polls. He said nothing about Wisconsin Governor Tony Evers' acceptance of federal assistance from the president to quell the riots and did not explain that he opposed calling in the National Guard to protect Americans from violent left-wing rioters. Joe Biden made this above-ground excursion from his basement for purely political reasons, and it shows. That statement from Tim Murtaugh from the Trump campaign. Rochester, New York is the latest flashpoint in claims of police brutality by white police officers. It has been 164 days since Daniel Prude, who was African-American, laid naked in the falling snow, restrained by several Rochester police officers until he stopped breathing. The family is demanding that the officers involved be fired and charged with murder. One of the questions is, what took so long for the case to become public? Justin Murphy is following that story for the Democratic Chronicle in upstate New York, and we spoke with him earlier today.
So when Mayor Lovely Warren addressed this at her press conference on Wednesday, she said the reason the city had not disclosed it was that it was prohibited from doing so by an executive order here in New York that essentially takes the authority for prosecuting police-caused deaths away from local prosecutors and gives it to the state attorney general. So Mayor Warren said that because that mechanism had come into play, the city was unable to say anything at all about the matter. That law does give the prosecutorial capacity to the state attorney general, but it is completely silent on any obligation that the local authorities have for making any public statements about it. Of course, usually when somebody dies in police custody, it's maybe in the middle of the day or in some way or another, there's other people around. This happened to be 3:30 in the morning on a very cold March night, and nobody knew about it. Nobody knew to ask about it. And so none of us had heard about it until very recently when the family started coming out with their materials and their body cam footage.
Let's go back to late March, and the video that you mentioned has been released. Let me warn our listeners that at times it can be graphic. Let's listen.
Now give me the mace. Give me the mace. Give me the mace. On my mama blood, they flipping over in her grave. I mean that.
Stop. Calm down. Stop. Calm down. Calm down, okay?
Some of the final moments of Daniel Prude when he was conscious. What happened after that incident?
So after the ambulance finally arrived, he was taken there and was brain dead at that point. And he spent 7 days in the hospital before being declared dead on March 30th. But the police chief here, Ron Singletary, said that they had begun the investigation internally on the 23rd, but then again said that it was paused as a result of the referral to the Attorney General's office. That, too, doesn't necessarily seem to have been the case. And, in fact, the Attorney General, Letitia James, has said she encourages the Rochester Police Department to proceed with its own internal review as she does her work.
And as you look at the video, which has gone viral, it appears as if they put something akin to a plastic bag over his head. The question, why?
Yeah, they call that a spit sock. And the idea is that if you've got somebody who's volatile in some way, Mr. Prude was evidently having some sort of mental health or drug-induced crisis that prevents them from spitting on the officers. You know, of course, March 23rd, that's just a week or so after the coronavirus situation really became very dire. So apparently at some point he had said something about that. So, you know, that's a tactic that police use sometimes. But of course, when you combine that with applying pressure to his head against the pavement, when you combine that to any kind of associated medical issue that he may be having at a time, it ended up being not only a very bad combination for his ability to breathe, but also apparently prevented the police from noticing that he had stopped breathing. It's one of the more disturbing parts of the video to see them applying pressure and then kind of belatedly realizing that he hasn't been breathing for a while and he had vomited clear liquid on the street, and they kind of only realize after the fact what they've done.
And he was in the street essentially naked, correct?
Entirely naked, yeah.
What was his story? Was he on drugs? Was he a suspect?
They did find traces of PCP in his system after the fact. So he was in Rochester visiting his brother. Daniel Prude lived in Chicago. He was here on a visit. And earlier that evening, so on the March 22nd, he had been having some sort of mental health crisis, was taken to the hospital for that and sent back home. And then at some point later that night of the 22nd into the 23rd, left the house again, wearing almost nothing, then removed the rest of his clothes. Somebody who's driving by in a truck called the police, and when they got to him, there he was, naked, evidently in the throes of some kind of mental health crisis, and it devolved from there. And that was a point that his brother made at the press conference yesterday, that in that instance and earlier on, he had called the police not to punish his brother, Daniel Prude, in any way, but to ensure that he got help. That's why the police were there, was basically to restrain him and keep him there until an ambulance could arrive to give him the mental health help that he needed.
We are talking with Justin Murphy. He is a reporter with the Democrat and Chronicle in Rochester, New York. And so yet another instance in which white police officers with an African-American man who dies in their hands. How is this playing out? Are there any concerns about demonstrations or protests in Rochester and Monroe County?
Yeah, it's playing out poorly. In fact, yesterday, even as the mayor and the police chief were having their initial press conference at the public safety building, that building was barricaded off, and some of the kind of key activists here who are working with the Prude family were arrested for trying to enter into the press conference and were prevented from doing so. Part of what has been galling for a lot of people in Rochester is not only did the mayor and the police chief not tell anybody that this had happened, but when we had demonstrations after the death of George Floyd, just as everybody else did, they kind of went out of their way to say that Rochester is different from other places where things like that happen, and people should have more faith than that in their own Rochester Police Department. And now it turns out that we had almost a perfectly analogous case 2 months before George Floyd died that they knew about and none of the rest of us did.
The headline, Why Was Daniel Prude's Death Kept Secret? The reporting of Justin Murphy, available at democratandchronicle.com in Rochester. Thank you for being with us.
You're welcome.
Also today, the president's top economic advisor, Larry Kudlow, telling his story of addiction, how he was able to remain sober after his bout with alcoholism. He has been sober for more than 25 years. It was a forum sponsored by First Lady Melania Trump.
I was a hopeless abuser of alcohol and drugs. I had tried several times unsuccessfully to get sober. Like a lot of my peers and friends, I went through bloody hell and suffered significant consequences. I'm not alone. Most of us had the same troubles. And I was unemployable. But by the grace of God, I did stay married. My wife is a saint, Judy. I've said that before, I'll repeat it. We've been married 34 years, it's a miracle. But it was difficult. The whole story was difficult. Having said that, I will offer this. It is because of my stubbornness and willfulness and the difficulties and consequences and the fact that I had to learn how to change my behavior and follow a few simple steps or guidelines. I believe sincerely today that it probably was the best thing that ever happened to me, because it forced me to change and seek a new path and return to faith.
That from Larry Kudlow, who is the president's top economic advisor at a White House event sponsored by the First Lady. He also told us his story in a C-SPAN interview. It's available on our website at cspan.org. You can search for the interview with Larry Kudlow. Also, the story of Alice Johnson. It's now part of the Trump campaign narrative. The mother of five spending nearly 22 years in a federal prison after initially sentenced to life for her drug convictions. 2 years ago, the president commuted her sentence, and last week, he gave her a full and complete pardon. Today, the Trump campaign releasing this new ad.
I'm free to hug my family. I'm free to start over. This is the greatest day of my life. My heart is just bursting with gratitude. I want to thank President Donald John Trump.
Almost all people said that criminal justice reform would never pass, but we came together as a group, we worked across party lines, and we got it done.
I'm an example of a woman who has been given a second chance in life. God bless you, and God bless America.
That from the Trump campaign. Well, on our podcast, The Weekly, the compelling story of Alice Johnson. She tells us what happened, including how it first felt when she received national attention.
It started, the first attention that it gained was in 2013. The ACLU selected me for their ad campaign to end mass incarceration. They spotlighted people who were serving life sentences who had not committed a violent crime. So I was starting to gain attention through their ad campaign, but when it really gained national attention was when Kim Kardashian West saw my story. In fact, I didn't know anything about social media, Steve, so I didn't know about that platform of social media. I did a video op-ed that went viral with Mike, and she saw it. When they told me that it had gone viral, it really scared me, because not knowing anything about technological terms and the internet, I thought that I had introduced the virus into the internet. That scared me worse than anything. So she saw it and she tweeted out, "This is so unfair," and she put together a team of attorneys to fight to bring me home.
You will want to listen to more of our conversation with Alice Johnson on our podcast, The Weekly. It is available on the web at cspan.org/podcast. And one final note, the debate season getting underway, and the town hall meeting debate is slated for October the 15th in Miami, Florida. And we want to hear from you, your questions to President Trump and Vice President Joe Biden, the Democratic nominee. You can send your questions to this email address, townhall@cspan.org. That's townhall@c-span.org. We'll look at the questions and try to incorporate them into the second of the three presidential debates. Thanks for joining us for this Thursday, September 3rd of Washington Today. I'm Steve Scully. Enjoy the rest of your evening.